The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by BetOnline.ag. Hey, it's October, the greatest time of the year in sports. The NFL, college football, baseball playoffs, and now we have the NHL and NBA in full swing. Are you looking for a place to make all your online wagers? Then head to BetOnline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus when signing up today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of the Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PODCAST1.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from Silver State over here in Nevada at the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0. I am kicked back in my podcast room. I still need to install some foam or some waffles to keep the bounce down, but nonetheless, let's move on along. A couple of days ago, I had a big-ass wrestling guy come by the damn 317 Gimmick Street, goes by the name of Walter. I first heard of Walter a while back. I guess it was when I was interviewing Joey Janela, someone like that, and they were telling me, man, this guy Walter, he's the guy on the independent scene. I was like, man, who in the F is Walter? Does he have a last name? Yeah, he has a last name, but he doesn't use it when he's wrestling. He just goes as Walter. Dude throws a mean-ass chop. He can wrestle his ass off. He can brawl. He's pretty technical. He can damn near do it all inside the squared circle. So my producer, Sean, said, hey, man, you want to talk to the guy? Let me see if I can hook it up. I believe he has an independent show coming up in the Los Angeles area. As you know, Los Angeles area is my territory. Nobody comes in or out without my permission. Just kidding. Sean hooked me up. Walter came by. He stepped out of the car. Big-ass dude. Shook his hand. I said, hey, Walter, how are you? He said, all right. I said, man, how's your back? And he kind of looked at me and he goes, yeah, my back's good. I said, well, good. I said, let's go next door. I got a big-ass cooler full of bullets. It weighs about 200 pounds. I'd like for you to help me throw in the back of my pickup truck so I can haul that stuff over to Nevada tomorrow. He said, all right. We loaded up the bullets in the back of my pickup truck, stepped over at 317 Gimmick Street, rolled sound, turned on the Zoom H6N, and started bullshitting about the business of professional wrestling. I enjoyed my conversation with this guy. Good kid. 31 years of age, been in the business about 12 years, moves real well from a guy his size, going back to his soccer background, as we will find out. I enjoy talking to this kid. Hell of a damn worker. Wish him all the best in the world, and glad to get a chance to meet him and talk to him and see what the dude's all about. I'll tell you what, as we parted ways and he was about to ride off in the sunset, we were standing out there in my driveway, and we were talking about just food, hunting, and bullshit, and hell, Walter told me that he was a vegan or vegetarian. I said, come on, man. I said, really? And he goes, yeah. I guess he'd started about a year or two ago, something like that. And hell, I said, man, the only vegetarian I ever met, or the first one I ever met, was my wife. And the only thing she will eat that's animal-based is egg whites. She won't eat an egg. It's only egg whites and no animal stuff. So that's an interesting tidbit of information that I found out after we got through recording. So he said when he started eating vegetarian, he lost a ton of bad weight, picked up some good weight, changed his body composition. And anyway, real interesting little fact. We didn't cover that in the podcast, so I thought I'd throw that out there right now. Right now, Walter is busy as hell on the independent scene. He gave me a string of dates that he was just fixing to head to. And he's really lighting it up out there. But after I got finished talking to Walter, my wife had already taken the Yukon down in Nevada. I loaded up my pickup truck, put a bunch of targets that I'd bought on my bullets in the back, loaded up Cali as my wife traveled down with Mula. And I got on the road in my Chevy Duramax 3/4-ton pickup and just kind of took my time rolling down the road and got into the ranch. And I got everything unloaded and finally headed back out to my shop. Had the keys to my damn 2017 Corvette Z06, and I fired that son of a bitch up. I let it idle for about 2 minutes to kind of warm it up, get the fluids going. Backed out of my shop, eased out of my driveway, put a couple of miles on it, let that motor get warm. And then I put my foot in that son of a bitch and it hauled ass and it scared the bejesus out of me. That is one badass cool car. When I drive it, I normally don't drive it very fast just because some bitch at 650 horsepower and 650 pound-feet of torque, man, that some bitch will get away from your ass. Enjoy driving it. Pretty good sound system. Put about 20-25 miles on it. Just kind of joy road around the neighborhood on the highways a little bit. Passed by a couple of highway patrol. I did not have my radar detector in the car. Luckily, like I said, I was just cruising around, wasn't trying to go too fast. But that is a badass car. And right now, I am fixing to hang up this damn microphone as you listen to my conversation with Walter. And then I wrap the show up. And then I'm going to get into my 95 Ford Bronco, go down to the meat market, and go get me some protein sources because I'm about 14 days into my program on about 2750 calories a day. I am eating protein, carbs, and fat. No more keto for me. I think I like the energy with the carbohydrates a little bit better. Plugging right along, zero alcohol. The weights are coming up, the fat's coming off. And I don't know what I'm getting tuned up for. I just decided it was time to get tuned up for. Hey, you know what? I'll tell you what, that's bullshit. That's the reason I started to get in shape, because I'm going down to see my niece graduate from Texas A&M University in College Station here in a few weeks. And I didn't want to roll in there like a blimp. I wanted to roll in there like a global icon and a national treasure to watch my favorite niece graduate from college. She graduated in 3 damn years. I'm so proud of her. I was in college for 5 years, 4.5 scholarship years, and then I decided, after only needing 17 hours to graduate, F it. I'm going to go start working on a freight dock, and then I end up getting into pro wrestling business and never look back to go get my college degree. But I always stress to anybody to either go to a trade school, learn some kind of trade, or go to college, arm yourself with as much education as possible to go out there and do battle in the business world. And so she is doing that, and I think she's going to go to pursue another degree after she gets this one. Kid's got a great head on her shoulders. She's a hell of a lot smarter than I am, but that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day. Let's get into some podcasting. Let's talk to Walter. On Twitter, he is at Walter AUT. Check it out. All right, I'm sitting here in the Silver State, Nevada. Talking with Dave Mason of BetOnline.ag, our go-to people for anything betting. Hey, man, what's it look like heading into next week's college football schedule for this Saturday?
Oh, boy. Well, action is great, especially, you know, this, like I said, the thing is when we lose a lot to the players, you know, the next weekend, the action is great. So, you know, I work more on the marketing side of things. So, you know, I don't really work on the odds side of things. I work more on the marketing. So I'm always looking at, you know, how our action is, the overall numbers, the bettors. You know, some guys go away for a week, go away for 2 weeks, go away for a month. But I'll tell you what, those weekends like this past weekend when we lose a lot, I mean, the numbers are through the roof the following weekend. So, yeah, early action is great. We got some good games on tap. Florida, number nine, Florida versus number seven, at number seven, Georgia. That's going to get that big. The action right now is 50-50. Georgia opened as 10-point favorites. They're now favored by a touchdown. You know, the Gators have been just cashing tickets for the public all season long. They're 6-1 against the spread this season, including 5 straight covers. But once again, the bettors are 50-50. You know, Georgia's been a very public team for the last 2 seasons, and that's probably why it's so 50-50. But I think by kickoff, you know, that won't be a huge needle. It'll be a huge bet game, but it won't be a huge needle. It should stay there. 50-50, 60-40, either way. I have a feeling we'll probably beat Georgia by kickoff.
What about that Iowa versus Penn State game? Man, that's very intriguing to me.
Oh, yeah. Also getting bet big. Iowa, Penn State opened -9, which surprised me, and that got bet down immediately. There, Penn State's currently favored by 5.5 points. Especially, I mean, Hawkeyes have been like cashing just as well as Florida this year. They're 6-1 against the spread as well. The Nittany Lions, they've been struggling as of late. They lost that heartbreaker to Ohio State, and they failed to cover. They lost an additional last weekend, and they failed to cover their last two. Iowa last 3 wins, though. I mean, they're winning, but their last 3 wins, I was just looking at it, their last 3 wins are teams that are combined 3-10 there in the Big Ten this year. The public is all over Iowa, and rightfully so, I think. 6-1 ATS the last seven games, and Nittany Lions have been struggling recently. The bettors realize that, and so 68% of the early bettors are on the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Tell me about Washington State versus Stanford, because Washington State's on a roll right now, but Stanford could come in there. What is Stanford even ranked right now?
They're holding on, man. They're 24, ranked 24th, and whereas Washington State is ranked 24th. Washington State, sorry, was ranked 14th. Yeah, it's one of those games. Stanford opened -4.5. They're currently -3.5. So even though they're ranked 10 spots lower, they're favored by 3.5. Whenever you got something like that going on, you can expect the public to be on the higher ranked team getting points like that. No difference here. 67% of the bettors, early bettors, are on Washington State. Once again, you know, a lot of bettors just look at that ranking and they're like, holy cow, Washington State's ranked 14th. Stanford's ranked 24th, but Washington State's getting 3.5 points. I'll take that. Also, as you said, Washington State's on a roll. 7-0 against the spread this year. They're cashing every game, so their loyal bettors are making a ton of money. And you know, they're coming off that impressive two touchdown win over Oregon. So yeah, we'll be Stanford fans come this weekend.
You know, I thought that game against Oregon was be a little bit closer than that. For them to win by two touchdowns surprised me. But you know, I'm a big Mike Leach fan, and you know, they always have an offense. Sometimes their defense doesn't show up for them. That's why this is an intriguing matchup with Stanford, because if Stanford gets that offense on a roll, they could very easily hand Washington State their ass, but we will see. Tell me about Texas versus Oklahoma State, because Texas finally coming around with Tom Herman over there head coaching. I knew he was going to turn that program around. Everybody's wondering, are they for real yet? I believe they are, but still, they could be suspect to a bad performance, and that could end up with a loss. And Oklahoma State with Mike Gundy there, you know, they're always dangerous, but their defense seems to be always a little bit suspect for them, usually a high-powered offense. But what's Texas versus Oklahoma State looking for you guys?
Yes, sir. This is going to be a lopsided game. We're going to be humongous Oklahoma State fans. You know, like you said, Texas is on a roll. Since that season over, that disappointing loss, they're 6-0. They looked great, including the Red River rivalry a couple weeks ago. Neither team has been very generous to bettors this year. They're both 3-4 against the spread. Texas opened -1.5 points. They've been bet up to a field goal favorite. Bettors just love road chalk in a game like this. Again, Texas ranked #6, Oklahoma State not ranked, but they're only given 3 points, and a lot of that has to do because on the road. But the players just see that -3 and that #6 ranking against a non-ranked, and they're going to scoop up the road chalk all day long. That's one of those games that we just get pounded, and there's no difference here. 85% of the early bettors are on Texas to cover that 3 points.
Very interesting. I saw Ellinger go down with an injury. Is he back yet, or is he still on the sideline?
I'm not sure. That's a good question, to tell you the truth. I'm not exactly sure. I think he should be back, I believe.
Well, let's move on to Texas A&M versus Mississippi State. What you guys are getting on that?
Yeah, this is the biggest sweat of the weekend so far.
Bet.
Yeah. I mean, this is like one of those games, too, that I was just talking about, you know, a ranked team playing on the road. Mississippi State opened -4. They're now given -2.5. So the public just loves those ranked teams getting points versus unranked teams. I mean, you see that scenario. We're gonna need that unranked team all day long, 100 out of 100 times. And there's no difference here. 92% of the early bettors are on A&M. And also the Aggies have been, you know, if you bet the Aggies this year, you're rich. They're 6-1 against the spread this season. So we're going to be huge Mississippi State fans this weekend.
Are they playing down in Mississippi?
Yeah.
Oh, man, so that's going to be a hostile environment, man. That's a tough place to play down there.
No, absolutely.
A&M relies on that 12th man, and that stadium is just electric. But I love what Jimbo Fisher has done so far there. And to me, it seems like A&M is playing at a much different level from the previous regime. And I believe in the next year or two, A&M is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
No, I agree 100%. Great hire. They're trending upwards. So, you know, hopefully it's not this weekend, though. Hopefully he has a little step back this weekend, Steve. We need Mississippi State big. It's going to be one of the biggest decisions of the weekend, without a doubt.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens and moving forward towards the national championship. And, man, I'm a big Roll Tide guy. So I'm going with Alabama to win the whole thing at the end of the day. Clemson, obviously, is still playing tough ball. They had a hard time against Syracuse a few weeks ago. I think Notre Dame's going to get clipped.
Yeah.
You know, they could still stay in, but they'll get clipped before they get there. I love what Ed Orgeron has done over at LSU. Michigan, I think, is suspect to another loss. Sometimes, you know, the Harbaugh factor, I don't know which way to go there. Sometimes that offense can hiccup. And then, you know, Georgia, Oklahoma, Florida, UCF. At 7-0, still hanging in there. And it was interesting on a completely different note to see Nebraska finally get their first win of the season.
Scott Frost,
coming out of UCF.
Thank God.
But, you know, bless his heart, you know, and that team, because I would love to see Nebraska. I'm not a huge Nebraska fan, but going back, obviously, to their football history with Tom Osborne,
absolutely,
national championships, it'd be nice to see them back in the picture where they should be.
Oh, but, absolutely.
Hey, we'll see what happens, though. But, hey, man, good speaking with you, and we will see how all of this plays out.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Get in on the action and head over to betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. One more time, betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts. Check it out. Our friends at TrueCar have a few football facts even you might not know about. The first football game was played in 1869. In an average game, the ball is typically in play for only about 11 minutes. And finally, pizza consumption rates go up during the week of a big game. Well, here's another fact you might not know that's actually really useful, especially if you plan on tailgating. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar ain't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Man, I've been lucky enough to been joined by Walter, one of the hottest cats on the independent scene from Germany. Dude, what's the federation you're with over at WXW?
Yes, exactly.
What does that stand for?
It's Westside Extreme Wrestling.
How extreme is it? Dude, you kind of get your, I mean, you can brawl, but you can wrestle and you're scientific. You're very technical. So what's extreme about it?
Oh, thank you. It's not like, it's what's the name when it got founded around the 2000s. I think it was just like, hey, we do our version of ECW, and now it doesn't really have to do anything with that anymore because it progressed into a more like mature product, I would say.
Dude, where you live?
I live in a city called Oberhausen.
Yeah.
It's like the next bigger city, I would say, is Düsseldorf.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I lived there since 3 or 4 years now, I think. Main office is in Essen. That's the next bigger city to Oberhausen. For of WXW, that's why I located there. So, yeah.
Now, you're 31 years old, right?
I'm 31, yeah.
You've been wrestling, give or take, right around 13, 14 years?
Oh, like 11, 12, I think.
In that ballpark, go.
Yeah.
Man, coming up as a kid, I mean, when I look at you, I say, man, this dude would be a badass football player. I'm talking about American football. But y'all ain't got that over there. I'm assuming y'all have rugby or soccer or what?
Yeah, soccer is the thing. I played soccer.
You play soccer?
Yeah, I played soccer. I was actually.
I bet you could kick the shit out of a damn ball.
I was actually pretty. I was a goalkeeper. I was actually pretty
That's
talented.
The best thing. I was going to play soccer, and I would never play soccer. If I did, I would be the damn goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So how long did you play that?
I think around 10 years. I started very young age.
Yeah.
Because my mom already used to play, and she was like a coach later too. And I started very young, and then usually like in soccer, it's a crazy business like in Europe over there. Like the point where it decides if you make it or not is really the young age. Like I would say like 13, 14 years old, 15. Well, also the time where you start like, okay, you start finding out how fun it is to go out with your friends. Find out about the new things in life that like, and when you start into your grown up life, that's where it usually decides. And I just decided to not stick with it anymore and just.
So how old were you when you quit?
I just quit. Like, it was also the situation. The team was a hard one. It was like we were ready for we qualified for the next step, basically. But I think the whole structure in the club and also with the coaches and also like how all the players and the parents of the players were, like, the mindset was nobody was ready to really do that next step. But because it's crazy, like, even as a 14, 15 year old, like, right now, it's like, there are academies, like, where...
Not as serious as a heart attack.
Yeah, where football and the school education are combined.
Yeah.
So, back then, it would have meant we train 5 days a week, and then on the weekend, it's game day. And the parents, they got to be able to manage that. They got to drive you through all the games. They got to bring you to training every day. They got to do their own job.
In the United States, we call those soccer moms or soccer dads.
Yeah.
They drive SUVs. I mean, dude, that's serious business. And there's people over here, you know what? It's really catching on over here. I mean, American football, I think, will always kind of be king over here. But
yeah,
it's really kicking. But my point is, if you have a kid signed up in that stuff, I mean, it is a commitment to get them there.
It is. Yeah, it's crazy.
So you stop. I mean, dude, what kind of a student were you? Smart? Average? The shits?
Lazy.
Come on.
Lazy.
What do you mean lazy?
I stopped.
God damn, you got to have an education, kid.
I know. Like, I realize that now. I'm good now. But
I'm messing with you. I dropped out of college with 17 hours to graduate. So I'm just messing with you.
The thing is, like, I was always, like, stuff I'm interested in, it's always super easy for me to pick it up and dig into it. But stuff I'm not interested in, I couldn't care less. Like, I can't really force myself to learn or study something that I don't care about.
What were you interested in?
Like history, for example, be something. In Germany, you call it geography. I don't know if that's the same word in English, too.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff. That's something I was super interested in, so I digged into it. But all that regular stuff, like mathematics or like biologics, like about nature and stuff that, is like, come
not
on.
Not so much. I took math class when I got into junior college. I thought I was going to go into business with my father and sell insurance. And I tried to take algebra and I tried to take accounting. And when I first started up, I said, oh, man, this is easy. And all of a sudden, we got a few weeks into it. I said, F this. So I dropped it and ended up dropping out of school. And I tried to switch my major to be a PE major because math and me don't work. Now, I can add and subtract, but that's about it. You got any hobbies? I know you're on the road right now. We're going to get to wrestling in a minute.
Yeah.
But what do you like to do when you're not traveling around the world? Because right now, and for the past few years, you've been hot as a firecracker. What do you do when you are not doing what you do?
I just like to spend, like, even though that's, like, one thing, even though I'm very busy and stuff, I really try to have, like, a good working private life. So I'm always try to not, like, jump into the life of a pro wrestler for 100% where you're really caught into it, because it makes me just, like, after those weekends, like, it's not my body, like, feels sore too, but it feels like my brain is fried. That's, like, the worst thing that results from it, I think. And it's like, I had parts like over the last month where I kind of felt like I was visiting my girlfriend's place instead of like coming home. So I'm really focused on like just have a regular private life. So it's like, and I don't, when it comes to hobbies, it's not like, I don't really have like crazy hobbies, but I just like to be home, be a normal dude. And I like to watch a lot of documentaries about history. Like, we just talked about, that's like one thing. And then I'd like to spend time with my fiance now. Just regular stuff, video
games.
Dude,
how long have you been with your girlfriend and now your fiance?
Oh, almost, like, I think it must be 11 years in March.
Well, if she's been with you 11 years and you've been in the business about 12, so she's obviously cool with it and understands the grind and the schedule.
Yeah,
and
she
the
understands
travel.
It. She doesn't really like it, but she understands it and really supports it. And also, I think her being more conservative about it than myself helped me out a lot of decisions that I made in wrestling in my life that I really didn't into everything.
How does she help you with the decisions?
I think as a wrestler, you love what you do. You're excited about everything. So if somebody comes up, especially when you don't have like a big thing running, you go like, sure, I do it. Whatever you need.
Yeah.
Right? But sometimes it's better to be like, wait a minute, let me think about it.
Yeah, because and then sometimes make a decision. When you jump the gun and you're like, oh yeah, let me do it. And all of a sudden that time gets there to do that. And you're like, oh man, what am I thinking?
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
So for example, like, when I started with wrestling, like, I started a little bit earlier and then I met her. But it's not like in the United States or how it was in England. It's not like there was a business around that you could be like, okay, I jump on it, I learn, and then I can make a living. Especially with WXW, we kind of basically just built business for our own, so a few people can make a living off. I started in Austria. That's where I'm originally from. I'm born in Austria, but I live in Germany for more than 10 years now. It was a good wrestling school, but there was no events whatsoever. I worked like the first year, did maybe 20 shows that year. And that was average for European independent wrestlers back then. So later I moved to Germany because there was more going on. Also met my girlfriend. She was German. And then I was busy every weekend, but it wasn't like the 3 or 4 shows every weekend because there were some companies. It was just fans running business, basically running wrestling shows. There was nobody who was like professionally make a living off it. And then when stuff for WXW would like develop and would get better, and I was like, okay, I really want to get out of that real job situation. I had a good real job, but at the other end of the day, it was like, it's not
what
like,
was it?
I worked at a logistics company, and at the end of it, like, I started there as a regular, like in an apprenticeship in the warehouse, but I worked my way up and I had like my own office and I was in charge of like almost 100 people and stuff like that. So it was pretty good and I had a lot of trust.
You left that to get in the wrestling business?
Yeah. The thing is, like, at the end of the day, it's not really like, at the end of the day, you're sitting there, it was a good job, money was fine and everything, but at the end of the day, you have to care about stuff that is not your real interest. So, but when I was thinking about earlier to leave that already and start wrestling, and It would just have been, okay, let me hustle and get as many bookings as I can. But she was like, no, you can't risk that. It's dangerous. Like, if you get injured and stuff like that. So hold that back a little bit. But then it came to a point with WXW where I say, okay, we need to start make some changes. And then we decided to open a wrestling school in Germany. And I said, okay, when I do this, I want to do it like full-time employed. That's the deal. I'm going to commit to it. And they agreed to it. So when I turned professionally in wrestling, I was employed by a company. So that was the good thing.
Well, I tell you what, that's hard to do in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
If you're instructing at WXW, man, what is the appetite for people that want to get into business in Germany? Mm. Is there a lot of people that want to learn? Here's the thing. When I broke in 1990, I was in wrestling school in 1989. When I showed up to wrestling school, there was 30 other people there ready to go. And, you know, I thought there'd be 100 people because I thought everybody wanted to get into pro wrestling. Doesn't turn out to be the case. So is there a big appetite for it in Germany? What's the scene over there? Is it thriving?
Yeah, at the moment, it's like I said, yeah, WXW is the main company. I would say we run about like up to 50 shows a year now. There are some other smaller ones, and it's way better than it was like 10 years ago, and it's way more professional. Like, the companies in general work on their presentation, the kind of venues they use, and also the talent got better, which is an automatic process, I think, if more stuff is happening. You have to say, like, German people are more, I would say, more conservative thinking than Americans. So what we all get raised to is like, you gotta have that good job, you gotta be secure and all that stuff. And on the weekends, you can do something like you'll be a football player, whatever you want to do. So people just get in there and be like, I really want to be a wrestler, but I want to do it at the weekends, maybe. So for some people, like, and especially also like some of parts of the roster of WXW, the guys have regular jobs and their only focus in wrestling is WXW. That's the thing they want to do. And I think that's with many students we have as well, that they get in and be like, okay, I want to make it to WXW. That's the first step. Like I say, like, even though, like, for somebody who starts out, like, just wrestling 50 or 60 shows a year, that's quite all right. That's not what I had when I started out. It's like, it's hard.
You're 6'4"?
Yeah.
300?
Yeah.
When did you start growing? Were you always a big dude?
I was always a big dude. I was, like, not in shape when I started wrestling. I was always doing sports, and when I stopped playing football, I didn't do sports like for a year or something, and I right away gained weight,
right.
Not in a good way. But when I started wrestling, I got into, like, after the first years, I got into more serious training and stuff like that.
Well, if you're working at a logistics company and you want to get into wrestling, when did you start watching wrestling?
Yeah, I was like, I started working there a little bit later before I started. When I just started, I was still like in the apprenticeship. My parents had a business too. They had like, I think you call it nursery, when they had like those glass houses where they produce like cucumbers and tomatoes.
Yeah, plants, grow stuff.
Yeah, it was a family business. So I worked there helping them out. And then, yeah, I was just a regular fan. Like, my parents would always go to the tournaments in Vienna that Otto Wanz ran.
Man, yeah, you're bringing back some history there.
Yeah, like, they took me to there. Like, my first memories, like, in wrestling was that I was too afraid to go to the toilet because Cannonball Grizzly, he was PNUs in WCW, he was sitting in front of it, and I was too afraid to walk in there. And I wrestled him after that. And the funny thing is, he remembered me. When I told him that story, because he said my face didn't change. I don't know if that was like a good if that was a compliment or not.
No. Hey, what was the difference? Because like over there working for Autovance, I mean, y'all were working 5-minute rounds back then, or when you were going to watch, was it more 5-minute rounds rather than long matches?
I don't know exactly how long the rounds were. But it was like, yeah, it was still rounds when I watched it. I remember that.
You like rounds or straight time?
Actually, I like it. Like, I like it not for every match, but there was one company who kept that kind of style of running shows alive even till today, like in Hanover, which was a tournament city too. And they would have like all regular matches, but the world championship match, there would be rounds and there would be a second at the ring and he would carry a towel and a bottle of water, and it made it look so competitive and special. I actually like the round system if it's done right, because it adds to the drama.
If it's done right, and that's a key thing, because there's so much psychology going in within the 5-minute match or the round.
Yeah.
Within the 5-minute round, as it plays to the next round, depending on how many rounds you're going. I mean, because you've got these just 5-minute stories going from round to round.
Yeah.
So I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I did one, my first one I did pretty early in my career with Drew McDonald. He was a Scottish guy. He also did all the tournaments. He passed away sadly, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. He was one of my favorite older guys, I would say, because they would all be a little bit bitter usually, but he would be the one who would be super open to the younger generation and help out. The thing with the wrestling business, I would say, in Germany and in Austria, that area, was it was big because it was all the tournaments there.
What was it, all local shows that you were going to? Did y'all get any American programming or British programming if they have wrestling over there?
That
television?
Oh, yeah, that
did
too.
Did you grow up on any of that?
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. On your stuff, actually. Like, my high time I can remember was all the... Which year was it when you got run over by the car?
Man,
was it 1999, 2000?
Yeah, about 99, because I had to get my neck fused up.
Yeah.
I was gone for about
That was the time when I was like consciously watching it, like be like, okay.
Did you start crying when you saw me get hit with the car, Walter?
I didn't start crying. I was super disappointed.
You caught the worst part of my career. Me being clipped by a goddamn car. Shit, that was the damn.
It was a letdown.
That storyline I was ever involved in, but we had to come up with a way so we can get my ass out of the way, because I was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Back
I had
then,
to get my neck fused up. Man, that was a suck ass angle.
I believed it back then. So that's what I can tell you.
I'm okay, Walter. I'm okay.
I'm good.
Walter just came over a while ago, and his Uber driver dropped him off. Where are you working tonight?
PWG in the Globe Theater.
Man, he walked out, all 6'4", 300 of them. I said, "Hey, Walter, how are you?" We shook hands, and I said, "Hey, man." I said, "How's your back?" He goes, "I feel good." I said, "Can you help me pick something up heavy?" And he goes, "Yeah." So we just loaded about 200 pounds of bullets in the back of my pickup truck. So I appreciate you helping me with that. Now, I digress, away from my injuries and our backs and my neck. So you decide to go to wrestling school. How does it work in Germany? Because you had like 3 primary trainers, kind of. 2 Japanese guys, and what's the one dude?
The Austrian Michael Kovac.
That's it, Michael Kovac.
Yeah. So that was the thing, I started before. Like, you had the business in Austria and Germany running with the tournament system.
Yeah.
And when that broke down, there was nothing left. And it was only like a few guys left who just started out when it went out of business. Because the top guys like Finlay, Steve Regal, those guys all came over. And the more famous German guys, they just retired because there was not really much around. It was just them. So Michael Kovac was one of them and a few others. And he just started, like, he was one of the guys who said, okay, I still want to keep that active somehow. And he started a training school. I didn't even know there were wrestling training schools in Austria, but one time in Vienna, in the city I lived in, there was like on a wall or something, it was a sticker and it just said wrestling school. And I was like, what? It's like over here? Because I wasn't aware that there were wrestling schools, because there was, back at that time, it was just like the only kind of wrestling that exists is WWE. Like, yeah. In my mind, it was that. And then I just went on the internet and found it and was like, okay, I just go there. And I just called him. I was like, hello, Mr. Kovac, I want to do wrestling training. And then I walked in there, and there was in a squash room. It was just one wrestling ring. It just fitted in there. And he just took me, taught me the first lesson. I was like, okay, I like it. I come back. And then
tell me about the first lesson, because if you know, you're watching the back end of the Attitude Era, and then, you know, back in the old days in the United States, if you want to get into pro wrestling school, and this was before me, really, and they would get you in there, and they just wanted to see if you wanted it bad enough, or they would try to run you off, to weed you out. So they didn't waste their time trying to train somebody who didn't really want it bad enough. and they would do Hindu squats, and they would do push-ups, and they would run bleachers. They would do anything to torture those guys, get them to drop out. That's what they used to do back in the day. When I broke in with Chris Adams, it was tumbling drills. It was learning how to take a flat back bump. Not a whole lot of chain wrestling, which a lot of Europeans are really known for. So how was the first days in the academy or the school? What were you guys learning?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, the system that Kovac trained the guys was always like one-to-one. He would always do it himself. And there wasn't anything like crazy. It would be the regular warm-up, like you say, like a few squats, few push-ups, sit-ups and stuff. And then start learning how to roll, start learning how to take like a flat back bump, a front one, maybe an overhead one. We didn't do ropes at the first time, like how to lock up.
Right.
And I think maybe the headlock, and that's it. That's it. But because since I was a goalkeeper, taking the bumps was easy to me and doing the rolls. So that was very, that wasn't a big challenge to me. So I skipped that part in terms of I have to learn it and try it. So it was just like that went really quick.
So you're pretty natural to it, because when I watch your movement in the ring, as many times a lot of the commentators will note, man, this guy really moves well for a guy his size. So you always had that athletic ability going back to your soccer days.
Oh, I would say, yeah. Like, because I did some sort of sports my whole life. Because I see this like in our wrestling school now. We have a lot of students. I think it's over 100 who signed up. And there's training every day. But out of those hundreds, there may be even 5 who come in or athletes already. And the rest is just like fans who go like, oh, I want to do this. That's cool. But then it will be way slower for you. You need to have some athletic background for professional wrestling, because it's such a...
You do, unless you're going to be a complete gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, and work the crowd.
Yeah.
And exist off that.
Yeah.
I think it can be done, but I agree with you pretty much.
Oh, it can be done, but it just takes a little bit longer.
I wrestled about 5 months, and the training school was once a week. We only had about 2 hours. There was about 25 or 30 of us, so ring time was very minimal. How long did it take you to go through the paces and end up getting in your first match?
I think my first match was like after 6 or 7 months.
Were you pretty brutal?
Of training. No, like that was the thing also. Like
come on, Walter. Everybody was this shits when they first started.
No, like I said, like I think even the first thing I really did was some random battle royal for some backyard fat. And it was just me beating the shit out of other people and the other way around, because I was the biggest one. And then my first real match was like in Switzerland. I got in. I didn't get beat down, but they did like a big comedy spot in that where everybody did like a forward roll over me. Even the guy on commentary, the referee, my own partner in the tag team match. So yeah, that was that. But hey, that's like part of it, I guess. Right, so.
Man, I go back, I remember when Steve Regal, William Regal, however you know him, like you said, from Otto in Austria.
Yeah.
And then Finley is amazing. So those guys are just awesome technicians. And I'm just big fans of that work. Here today, out on the indie scene, I saw a match you had, what was it, last year with Zack Sabre Jr., maybe a year and a half. Very technical, a lot of scientific stuff, your big guy stuff, all the chops, stuff like that. How do you prefer to work? Because, I mean, you can brawl, you can wrestle, you're scientific. What's your favorite match? Or is it just whatever your opponent needs you to bring? Or how do you like to work?
Yeah, that's what I try to, like, I always try to see what my opponent does, and then I try to adapt, and rather than be like, okay, you gotta adapt to me. Because I think it makes more sense. Because it's easier for me to adapt to somebody else than the other way around.
And that's a good trait to have. And most times, I mean, to me, that's kind of like Ric Flair. I mean, when you work with Flair, you know, if he was going to work with Brody, he could brawl or they'd wrestle a little bit. Or whoever. Flair could make anybody. And so I kind of see the same as you. Dude, tell me about the chops. What's up with those? Let's talk with PCO, because I saw that match you had at George Miller's Spring. That was a hell of a damn match. And it's funny because, you know, there's not a whole lot of guys out there, you know, me included, that are 6'4", 300.
Yeah.
So you're working with a lot of guys on the indie scene. With all due respect to all of the talent, you know, they're anywhere from, you know, 5'10 to 6'4", but kind of under that 210 range, maybe even 200. Let's go there first. Dude, how is it working with pretty much everybody smaller than you right now?
Oh, I like it. It's way better. I like the story of the match, and I'm the bigger guy. I'm in control and have the other guy work up towards me. I like that way more than wrestling just another big guy and we do some moves.
Right.
Because that's what it turns into at some point. I like that way more. I prefer that. It's really good. Like, in general, with the matches in general, I did like, I don't really care about, like, be like, I like to do that kind of style of a match or like that style of moves or my big goal, how I prefer to do my matches is when people come in and they pay their for the ticket, for the 3 hours. And when they watch me, I want them to believe for that
right.
time the match takes. I want them, as soon as I go through the curtain, I want them to believe into what I do in a negative or positive way, whatever is like my part on that day. And that's like the most important thing to me. So I don't like stuff where you give the fans the wink that, hey, what's going on? Because, I mean, wrestling is open nowadays. Everybody know, everybody can read kind of how it works. Right. But I still think, I think it's easier for us than it ever was. Because when I came up, the wrestlers were like, oh, we have to be 100% kayfabe. But everybody already knew, like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
We all knew it. But now it's open. We can talk on that, like on a podcast, how it works. And people know it. But people come to the shows and are like, I'm ready to believe it. And they don't come with the mindset anymore to be like, okay, let's see how we think, like how we find something to prove that it's not real. Now, it's so easy now because people want to believe what we do.
They do want to believe when they pay the ticket and they're inclined to do whatever they want, but they want to believe. And I think I've heard you say that several times, not to paraphrase you. I mean, you do like to keep it serious.
Yeah, you know? I like it. It's like I see that they're like, for WXW, for example, sometimes we have like a run of like local shows where people don't, they actually don't know who we are. But sometimes you're going to have that like the last match of the evening and you do the happy go home promo after that. Then you can do something to entertain them, like have those moments to give them a laugh and stuff like that. I like that too, but I will never give the audience the feeling when I'm in the ring that I just, that I goof around, that I'm not in a competition situation.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Hey, you guys, it's Natalie Eva Marie, and I am so excited. I have a brand new show on Podcast One called The Natalie Eva Marie Show, co-hosting with my husband, Jonathan Coyle.
Handsome husband, babe.
And you guys might know me from WWE, Total Divas, my fashion line, NEM Fashion.
And you guys might know me from the CrossFit world and the fitness community. I'm really, really pumped for this show. We get to interview the kings and queens of their respective fields. I'm talking celebrities, athletes, activists, people that are top of the line in business. I'm really, really excited.
Anything that you guys want to hear about, we're going to talk about, including whatever guests you guys want us to have on. You will be included 100%.
Oh, absolutely. We want this to be very, very interactive. You guys tell us who you want to bring on, and we'll bring them on.
That's right. So you guys, make sure to download new episodes of The Natalie Eva Marie Show every Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and the Podcast One app. And make sure to rate and review.
And rate and review 5 stars.
That's right. Take us to the top.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Do you prefer working heel or baby? And I know kind of across the board, and this is me from watching your matches, you just kind of go out there and you seem to be a fan favorite because people like your style, they like you.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to be a good guy, nor are you trying to be a bad guy. So is there anything that you prefer, or you just go be Walter?
If I have to choose, I prefer to be the heel.
Thank you.
But on the other
if
hand,
you said baby face, I was going to pick your ass and throw it through the window.
It's silly. Like, if you're usually the bigger guy, there's no reason. Like, it's my job to make the other guys look good, because that's also my goal at the end of the day. Even though I'm going to look good because I beat them up and I'm going to bruise them for most of the match, but at the end of it, they overcome me. And I just, at the end of the day, we both got to walk out. Look good, doesn't matter who
correct.
Wins it.
Dude, yeah, I believe the same thing. You can go out there and I do believe in a territory or in a wrestling company, sometimes you have to be a little selfish in your journey or quest to get over. But once you get over, then it's, hey, man, it's 50-50 because we're doing this for a damn living. But that climb to the top is kick, scratch, and claw.
It's definitely a thing. Like, you have to be – in wrestling, you have to be selfish to a certain point. It's a balance. It's like you got to find that line where you go into your business for yourself, but then find it, okay, it's enough. Now I need to work for the other guy, because we see people fail both ways. Some people go way too far with being like too focused on themselves and they never go anywhere. And you also have people who are super talented, but they're too nice guys in real life. They don't go into business for themselves and then they're never going to make that real next step.
Exactly, because the business doesn't add up.
No, yeah. So
there has to be that balance.
So you have to take your things here. There, you got to be sometimes in a match when a guy goes, you got to be no. Not now. Like, it's not your time now. So, like, sometimes you have to do it.
I asked you about the chops a while ago, and I asked you 10 questions from there, and Callie did a run-in. How about those chops, man? You got some long-ass arms. Those things,
yeah,
they're like whips.
Yeah.
Does anybody ever complain about those things? Because by the time you and PCO had wrestled at the spring break and after 34, Jesus Christ, one of his chest was purple and the other one looked like it's bleeding. You know, I never was a fan of the chops. I took my share, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But I, you know, those chops of yours have got kind of a different level. And I see, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. is a tremendous worker.
Yeah.
I've known him for years. But you got anybody ever complains about those things?
Some people.
Okay, you don't have to mention their names.
No. But some people, joke wise, complain, but I think they mean it.
Yeah.
But I don't care. Like, all this stuff I do to people is safe and easy. I will never do anything stupid, dangerous, or never ask anybody to take anything stupid. So I think, man, you'd rather take that big slap on the chest and we get the same reaction out of it than for some of those crazy moves.
I agree.
That's way better. And also, it's like the matches you watched, like with Zack and with PCO, those were matches where we, like, beforehand, it was like, okay, let's go. Because Zack, for example, I've wrestled him so much time over the years. And as you for sure know, when you wrestle a friend, when you wrestle a friend of yours, you just go crazy a little bit sometimes. Then with PCO, with Carl, because funny thing was, I wrestled Carl almost 10 years ago before that Mania match. So I already knew him, and he was crazy back then. So I knew what I was like about to happen. And he was like, man, Walter, give me your chops. Let's go. Even though with all the other guys who usually don't chop, I want them to sell it big. I want them to put him in a moment where it means something. It's not just a in-between throwaway.
How was it working with PCO if you'd worked him 10 years earlier? You get all this experience now, because even though you think you were good on that first match, you were still pretty green.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So how was the match after that? Well, that was Joey Janela's spring break match, right?
Yeah.
Did he notice the difference? Did he say anything to you? I mean, you knew the difference because you got 10 years of experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was...
That's a big effing difference between being green and being seasoned.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, like, I try to, in general about myself, I try to don't believe my own hype, so I still consider myself
correct.
Somebody, like...
Don't believe your own shit, people. It'll make you complacent, lazy, and arrogant. It won't get you nowhere.
It's a learning process, right?
It is.
Sometimes I realize I figured out, but still, like, sometimes...
You do got to believe in yourself to an extent.
Yeah.
Don't believe everybody else's shit about you, though.
So it's like... But I remember back then, PCO, Carl would already do, like, crazy dives and stuff like that. And then when Janela hit me up, be like, hey, Walter, you got to wrestle PCO. He's crazy. What do you mean he's crazy? And then he tells me all his stories, and I'm like, Jesus, what am I into? Because that weekend, I wrestled like seven shows, and that match happened like at 1 a.m. or something on a day when I wrestled two or three times already. So I was like, okay, Carl, let's go. And then he comes up with all these crazy ideas, and I was like, Carl, no, come on. I said, please, I'm simple. We don't need all this. Like, let's have a wrestling match. We don't need that. And he was like, okay, Walter, I trust you. Let's do it. Yeah, we ended up having a good match. I think after that night, like, that was kind of like the night that made him. Also, because he was concerned, because before the match, I came out and I grabbed the mic and I said, like, thanks for everything you did, but just go home. It's not your time. And then I just beat the shit out of him. And then at the end, he won and came up. And I rather think, even though it's impressive that he can do a moonsault, I think the story that him, like, that he just battles through the match and at the end even succeeds was, like, the way bigger factor for him getting that
ovation.
Whose
idea was the not the finish of the match, but the finish of what happened in the ring? Because I think you were going to walk out, and then you chopped him.
Right?
And then you chopped him, and you stuck your hand out.
Cans.
I popped.
Yeah.
I dug it.
I did this with some Japanese guys, like, years ago when we wrestled. And I felt like it would be a good fit after that match, too.
Oh, it worked.
Yeah. So I just told him.
And like, you got beat, but it's like you chop a shit out and stuck a hand out. It was like, to me, that was like the ultimate mutual respect.
Yeah, that's what I tried to.
You know, it was his night that night.
Yeah.
Your night any other night.
That's what I tried to, like, tell, like, to finish up that story. First, you disrespect somebody, be like, come on, go home. And after you beat him, but then even though he shows you respect, that's the ultimate, like...
Yeah.
happy end for it, I would guess.
but physical between two big ass brutes.
Yeah.
Not like happy in a.
Yeah.
Just to put a smile on everybody's face, that was badass happy. That's respect happy. That's business happy. Because, you know, people will pay, hey, the first match was a bust ass match, but, you know, the end, they shook hands. Let's see what happens next.
Yeah.
I'm not booking the event. I'm just saying. You're telling the story.
Yeah.
You put the period on the end of it, and people are ready for the next story.
And at the end, like, I really got to say, like, I was super happy for Carl that it worked out that way, and especially that what he receives now, because over the years, I met many, like, guys around his era, like those guys, and some of those people seem to appear very difficult. And Carl was, he's always super laid back and nice. He's in this twice as long as everybody else in the locker room, but he would never walk around and be like, hey, listen, kids, I've been there, done that. Carl is always super nice and super, like, he adapts to, like, just wants to be one of the boys and have fun. He never acts like I'm the big veteran and you just listen to me. He's excited about what we do, and I respect that even more than somebody coming up and be like, hey, man. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't like that routine either when someone thinks, oh, yeah, I've been around 20, 30 years, whatever, and the big shot. I don't go for that. I don't play it. I lasted, I think, 13 years in the business. But I consider myself, although I've been retired since 2003, I kind of consider myself still in the business.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm in the know, and I love the business, so I still love to watch it. So I would never walk into a locker room with that type of attitude.
Yeah.
You walk into a locker room like that, everything's on a level playing field, or if I am this veteran that I am, then I'm there to help people if they were to have a question.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, I did this and sold out that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I agree. Like, I remember, like, that's a funny story, actually. Like, we did at a movie convention in Germany. WXW was booked there to just put a wrestling ring up and do a show a day. And also, the ring got used for pictures with Roddy Piper, who was there. Not as a wrestler, but for his movie roles.
Yeah.
And we were, like, changing in this little tent. And after the show, like, he came in, just stuck his head through the curtain, and just came in and introduced himself to everybody. Super nice. And then he just started talking to people and, like, told them about the matches, what he think was right, what he think was wrong, and stuff like that. And then he said thank you and left again. And I was like, man, that's awesome. That's great.
Man, when we used to travel through Germany, we'd always go on a two-week tour. We'd be in the UK for a week and in Germany for a week. And
it'd
be a bus and a B bus, one for the heels, one for the babies.
Yeah.
I mean, we were protecting the business to that degree.
Yeah.
And so, man, every time we went to a hotel, you know, there was usually, you know, anywhere from a 2 to 6 hour drive to the big cities that we were going in. And every time we stopped, there was a rule. I don't know who put it into effect, but the bar must be open. It was. Whether it was England or Germany. Sometimes we showed up those things at, like, you know, 12 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., 5. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
The bar was open. The boys would hit it. We just go crazy. I mean, it was a good time. I love performing over there. What's the scene over there now? I mean, are you like a health fanatic now? Do y'all go out and have a few beers? I know it's independent. Everybody's coming from different areas. Well, what's the scene as far as all the boys hooking up? Like right now, you're in Los Angeles. Will you go hang with anybody?
No, not really. Like when we're in LA, for example,
well, it's crazy because it's so big.
Yeah. But what I would do here is like maybe go to Venice.
We're a mile and a half from Venice.
Yeah, that's the one thing I would do, and then basically that's it. Like in general, I would think like as I experience it right now, I would think that the wrestlers now are more calmed down and more easy, and the business in general is like I would call it healthier when it comes to the party effect of it.
I would agree with you.
And usually more often it's like on those weekends you have to catch, because it's very few occasions it's like there's a bus that brings you from A to B, so you got to do all the travel on your own, and most of the flights on the weekends are red eyes, so it's usually just show, go to dinner, and then go to sleep, go to your hotel room and chill out. And here and there, like when there's the occasion, you have a few beers when you have more time at the place where you eat at some bar. But for me personally, I'm like, I don't know, the last time I got drunk at wrestling is maybe like 6 years ago or 7 years ago.
Walter, that puts a smile on my face. That the fact that you're taking care of yourself. By the time I hung up all my gear, well, I had to get out because of a neck surgery, but man, I was running pretty wild there. So the fact that you're taking care of yourself, props to you on that.
Oh, because, yeah,
hey, it's fun to go out there and let your hair down and have a couple of brews every now and then. But
yeah,
you're doing it on a night-in, night-out basis, man, that's a recipe for a quick flame-out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, it's dangerous. And I think it's dangerous to get, like, stuck in it, too. Like, where you go, like...
Seen many guys get stuck in it. And you know all the guys that have passed away in the business far too fast.
And you also, you have people now who just overdo it. You always have them. But it's like, that's personal choice. It's up to them. I don't want to judge them or anything. It's just, like, don't think it's the right thing to do for me. And also when it comes to drugs and stuff like that, I would think like the drug choices nowadays are healthier. I think people would rather smoke weed instead of like do pills or do anything dangerous, right, and stuff like that. So that's like,
you know, and on that note, let me snort this line of coke right here. I'm kidding. Walter looked at me like I was shooting. I'm kidding you. Here's a question. Venice is right down the road. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So you like to walk around because, man, there's a lot of dope smoking over there.
Oh, yeah.
Just when you walk down that front beach, man, you can smell it everywhere.
Oh, it's crazy, yeah.
So you like seeing all the crazy folks? I mean, I don't mean that. I mean that with respect, man. That's an interesting dynamic. Let me say that.
Oh, it is.
Politically correct.
I'm more like, it's not like the beach itself. I like to go Gold's Gym. Yeah. Because it's crazy. It's like, whoa. And it's like Muscle Beach or just hanging at the beach. Sometimes it's too crazy. Like with the people there, like you mentioned, it's a sight to see, that definitely. And I like the beach. So that's the reason I go there. The main point, it's usually we go to Gold's Gym or Muscle Beach for a workout.
I used to go, when I first moved to L.A., I went out to the front beach or, you know, Gold's Gym. I used to train at Gold's Gym, but I used to go to the front beach. But it's like, you do it twice and you live here. It's like, okay, you don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
So tell me about the gym. Big dude, what kind of workout, what kind of training do you do?
I kind of always did different things over the time. So I tried, right now, for the last year or so, I don't really try to have like a bodybuilding type of training because I don't think it fits what I need to do in the ring. So I try to train like accordingly to what I do. So for example, it's the basic exercise you would do. You would deadlift, you would squat, you would bench press. But I wouldn't go to like a butterfly machine instead. After that, I would rather try to have like do something more functional. I would still add like Hindu squats and Hindu push-ups in that. And I would do circles for cardio and stuff like that. And it's really how you know yourself. It's like, it's such a big difference if you can work out like, if you're home like 5 days a week and you can focus on workout, or if you have like a few weekends in a row where you're gone 4 days, it makes such a big difference. So sometimes it really is like you only have 2 days a week where you can really dig into the workout, and the rest is just maybe a little bit cardio to maintain the shape and stuff like that. But also with that, like for me, like the most important thing for the workouts, like do something that keeps me healthy and keeps me feeling good. So that's like the main focus I have with the workouts.
What do you like to do for cardio? Just because I've been watching a lot of your matches. You never seem to blow up. You always seem to have extra gas in the tank. Is it with the workouts? I know obviously ring time is the best thing for cardio in my opinion because that's what you do.
Oh, it is.
So, but just cardio in the gym. Will you run? Will you get on a...
It's just regular, like regular. I would put up a circle. Like sometimes it would...
Tell me about the circle. What do you mean?
It's like there's the Tabata thing that is like seems to be that's super easy because I just put in like in my gym they have like a basement with all the equipment, like a big wheel and like that thing you push. I don't know how you call it.
Like a sled.
Yeah, like that, and the bell ropes and the box to jump on. And I do something out of that.
So you make a circuit and just...
Yeah, I do something out of that.
The whistle blows, you go.
Yeah, I just go. So that's it. And I'm lazy with cardio. It's not fun. It's like... Being blown up is a shitty feeling.
Yeah.
So I really struggle to really push myself into that. But I still do something to get in motion.
But there's no worse feeling than being in the middle of a ring, sucking for oxygen.
Oh, yeah.
And you're blown up. And this happened to me when I tore my tricep off my arm. And I came back. And all of a sudden, you know, I was with WCW. I got fired. ECW. Only one or two matches, and then I was hired on by WWF. You remember Savio Vega?
Yeah.
Puerto Rican dude, man, old school. I was working heel, he was working baby, so I had to shine him up. Okay, I blew up shining him up because I hadn't had any ring time.
Yeah,
I couldn't even work out. So blew up shining him up, laid in a rear chin lock for my heat. Didn't really get any heat. I was trying to get ready to flip-flop and fly for his comeback, and then he made his comeback, and I had to breathe for that. Then we had to go home. So after 2 months of working with Savio Vega, they was lucky if me and Savio was on 1, 2, or 3, because we was always on the first part of the card, Man, once he got me in shape, thank you, Savio Vega. A million times, Savio Vega got me in shape, and it was hard to follow that match. My point is, and I've been telling us, there's a couple of guys that I talk to or people that I talk to here and there, cardio is so important. If it's time to get it on, whether it's time to grind down in that heat and get mean or time to fire up as a baby, if you can't go, mister,
that's true.
You got to be able to go. That's a shitty feeling.
But also, like, it's the when my cardio started to get really, like, not really good, but way better, is like a few years ago, I started to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, like, so just grappling. Yeah. And that got me in real good shape because those sessions are just like 1 hour technique, one hour sparring. And I got so blown up the first few times. But if you get used to it, you get along very good with it. And it helped me in wrestling so much, also with like moving around and stuff like that. So now I'm very confident with it because it's also a thing of like, you gotta understand how you work in the ring, how to pace yourself. You can't go like 100% the whole match. Like a few people maybe can who are like crazy athletes, but like
it's not always warranted. It all depends.
Yeah, of course.
Because most of the time it's going to be a build.
Yeah,
building to the finish unless it's in a feud and it's a jump start.
Yeah,
but at some point it's got to taper down and level off before it ramps back up. To your point.
Oh yeah, definitely. And also you need to have moments in the match that stand out. Like if you go 100% all the time, the 100% will be the minimum of what people expect. So
that's a bunch of exclamation points in a row. So what else can they expect?
Yeah.
So there's no place for them to get in or jump on. Question for you, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, how far along are you in that? Do you have a belt? Are you?
No, I had to, like, that was when we lived in another city in Germany. And as we moved to the place where I live now, I didn't really find like a club or something around to do that. So I had to quit it. But it went really well. I went there like twice or three times a week for training. I even did one tournament and I won it actually in my league. But I was heavier than most of the other people. So there were blue belts. That was legit. That's a funny story. That was legit the first time I was in a real fight my whole life. I've never been in a real fight my whole life.
What happened?
That was like the fight, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the match. That was like the first time I was like, I gotta kill that guy. I'm ready. So I was pretty ruthless, like, because I did it with the gi on.
Yeah.
So we would have techniques where, for example, to put a choke on, you gotta get that face in position. So you basically with the gi, you put the elbow on his chin and just slide with your whole arm over it. And I tapped one guy with even like that, just a slide over it, just because I put my whole weight on his face and just grinded it down and stuff like that. And then with the finals, I had a blue belt and I was like, oh my God, he's gonna tear me apart because he's higher ranked than I was. And then like I just went for it. It was crazy. It's like I had never had that adrenaline rush before when it comes to like being in a real fight situation.
Walter, you are a killer.
It was crazy.
Now, just from being on the show, people are going to think you're a shooter. Don't F Walter's going to shoot on you.
It's fine. There's like more than enough people nowadays who are like real combat athletes. So.
Looking at your style, the way you work, any American influences at all? I mean, because you got the chops, you have all the scientific stuff, you can brawl, you can do everything, but there's got to be some key people maybe that you saw that influenced you. Because Ric Flair was a huge influence on me. It turns out when I got away from trying to be Ric Flair, that's when I found my success.
But yeah.
For you and your style, because you somehow remind me, I don't know why, a little bit of Bam Bam Terry Gordy.
Yeah.
And then somewhat of a little bit of a Dory Funk Jr. from Japan stuff, and so many other people in there as well. But I just named two people, and they might not even, and sometimes Brody. You tell me. You're the guy.
Oh, it's definitely that circle of people I would have looked at. Because the thing is, like, the professional wrestling I enjoy the most is, like, 90s All Japan.
Yep.
Because for me, it's the perfect mix of drama and competition. It tells big stories, but it's still like focused on a competition of two people and the natural like fighting spirit and charisma that develops out of that. That's like it's very special. So that's like, that was always like the people I would look at most. And also like, I was happy enough very early to go to Japan, train there for a few months.
How did you like Japan?
Oh, very, very good. Yeah. I really liked it. It's like the training the first few times because it was nothing that we knew from home. I just died. I was like, it was too much for me. Like it was hard. It was really, really bad. And then, also in Zero, I was with a company called Zero One. It was Shinya Hashimoto's thing after he separated from New Japan, but he was passed away by then already. And I was just scheduled to go there for training. And then they said, hey, we have a gimmick for you. And then they put me like in a green suit, like a green singlet with green hair and like yellow and pink stripes on my chest, and called me like, it was a comic figure called Gacha Ping. And I figured out years later, because they had like a working agreement with some federation that supports kids, and that was the mascot of it. So they just put me in that goofy ass outfit, and I was like, hell, screw it. That's like 10 matches a month in Japan with like 18 years old. I just do it. I don't care. And during the time I trained with Ricky Choshu,
yeah,
in his dojo, and that was like just super basic training. Like one day would be, okay, today we do stomps to a laying opponent. So they put pads there, and for the first half hour, we would just stomp on a pad. Doing all that, that kind of like defined me on my career, because I really tried to do the most simple thing as good as possible, still to that point. But when it comes to like watching stuff and really try to find, okay, that's the way I want to go, it's definitely like Brody, Stan Hansen, then of course like Kobashi, Misawa, those kind of era of people, like Jumbo Tsuruta. Like I looked at them and I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to give people a competition, but also that kind of competition where they're emotionally invested in it.
Yeah, yeah, competition, but and also some showmanship in there. I mean, to bring them in. But yeah, competition. That's all it's about. There's winning and there's losing.
And it has to come natural, because like when you look at Stan Hansen, for example, he was like a big attraction. He was like, oh my God, like what kind of a guy is he? But he was never in the ring. Would he stand in the middle of the ring and do like a big pose or be like, come on, people, give me something?
Yep.
He would never do something like that. It would just come the way he was. People would react to be like, oh my God, what is going on? That's something I try to be as well. Like try to be attraction for the people, just in the way how I present myself and how I wrestle.
But man, I used to go back to watch some of the, it was Hansen and Brody when they were tagged up together, and he would come out swinging that big bull rope with that bell on the end of it. And man, and this was back in kind of like when the people were still sitting on like pads, chairs, pads on the floor. And bro, I mean, Hansen would come through there swinging that goddamn cowbell, hitting people, hitting fans, marks, whatever you want to call them. He was running roughshod, and of course, they believed that shit was 100% legit back in the day, but he was an entertainer, and yeah, he didn't go to the people or try to work the people. It was him within himself, and
yeah,
everybody finds a formula that works for them, you know, like Hogan. You know, he thrived on working the crowd, and he could work too. Don't let anybody tell you Hogan can't work. He can work, but he worked the crowd more than anything.
Yeah.
Whereas Stan, his focus was inside the confines of a 20x20 squared circle, and it was competition, and that's what they liked about him. And he was over 10 times more in Japan more than he was in the United States.
And also, that sounds crazy maybe, but also one detail I think why that kind of style was so good, because it was chaotic to a certain point too.
Yes.
I'm not a believer that wrestling has to be crisp and perfect all the time, because it's not believable in a situation, because things can go wrong. It's not like in a fight when you try something, it's not like it has to work out. And it doesn't like, it's not always like, sometimes you try to hit someone and you just go close over his head. And it's not like he just does a fancy counter to avoid it. It just sometimes things go wrong. And I think that's super okay.
I do too. But also I believe that there's like a pro presentation. There has to be like on a lockup. Not everybody's going to lock up exactly the same all the time, but a good lockup, if you're locking up, needs to be a good lockup.
Yeah.
Working someone's arm. I mean, you can see, I don't want to say strong style, because most of the strong style stuff is done with really good technique.
Yeah.
When you see someone out there just potatoing the shit out of someone,
yeah,
just, that can really look like shit. And you can think, man, that looks like it really hurts. It really does.
Yeah.
Good, strong stuff can be laid in, but it looks professional great.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, beautiful Bobby. I always admired his work. Like, Ricky Morton was a smaller guy, but a fantastic worker. It was a presentation. And Ricky was certainly not a strong style guy, but everything he did looked good. The guys that worked heavy, I love guys that work heavy, because I would like to lay my shit in as well. I wouldn't say going crazy, but
yeah.
And then within the context or course of a match, if someone's getting fatigued, things are going to get a little sloppy, or
yeah,
you're trying to fight from underneath, it's not going to all look crisp. But there needs to be a pro presentation, highs and lows, and always executed, you know, with as much perfection, like you said, with going back to the stomps and the dojo. But yeah, slop can be or is effective when it's needed to be. It's not all going to look like ballet.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, what I think is like, you should do things in the way where the regular guy watches it, and I think there are two kinds of reaction. The one thing is when you do something that people actively like. Let's say somebody can do a cool move, like the sit-out spinning pile drive, whatever that is. And whenever that gets hit, people go, yeah, that's my favorite move. But I think the more important reaction is when people react out of their subconscious mind. When you do something and they automatically, because they have it in them, react like, oh shit, or be like, oh, that's good. Like, that reaction, I think, is worth more than the one you...
Right, than
the obvious one, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, just like a guy like me, I'm not going to out wow factors, you know, somebody with way more athletic ability or gymnastic ability or whatever.
Yeah.
Like what I need to do needs to be from within. It needs to work for me.
Just yeah.
Like everybody needs to find what works for them. The crazy athletic stuff is awesome if you can do it.
Yes, of course.
I think it's certainly, you know, high risk stuff that could potentially, you know, shorten your career, but. You got to find what works for you.
But you need to connect with the people first.
Dude, if you ain't connected with the people, you ain't doing nothing.
And if you add like the crazy shit on top of that, yeah, then it's perfect.
Yeah.
But if that's just what you do and people don't care about you, then it's like the...
People got to feel it, Walter.
Yeah.
They got to be invested. And it, you know, goes back to some of your matches. You're putting in a lot of time.
Yeah.
On a lot of these shows. Are you working now? We're speaking on a Friday afternoon. So are you working tonight or is it tomorrow night?
No, tonight.
So tonight, who are you working?
Jeff Cobb.
Okay, I've heard that name. So, like, how many minutes do you think that you'll be asked to put in? 20 to 30?
I think, yeah. Like, at the moment right now, like, I'm in the lucky situation to be wanted everywhere. But they also wanted me always, like, in most cases, they ask me to do, like, 20 minutes or more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you like putting in time?
It depends to a certain amount. I like to put in time when the story is there to perform it. I don't like to stretch it out for just a reason to be like, oh, I had a long match. Like, if I can tell a compelling story over the time, I go for it. If not, then I go shorter because then it's not needed.
Well, dude, I mean, I agree with that 100% because if you say, hey, man, I want to go 30 minutes just so I can say I went 30 minutes, nobody gives a shit about that. The match has to be good. I'd rather see 12 to 15 minutes of a great match than 30 minutes of an average match.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing nothing for me.
Yeah.
I want to pay to see something good. And if it's average and your bottom line is just wanting to put in time to make me happy, no, I don't give a shit about time. If I'm paying my ticket, as long as it's good or great,
yeah,
I'm happy.
People don't care. People will never be like, oh, 5 minutes more would have been better.
But you can put in time. How long did it take you before you realized that? Because when I first started off in Memphis, it was a little spot show. My first night in a different territory, 2 months in the business, Dutch Mantel says, Steve, go out there and give us 8 or 10 minutes. And I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing? 8 or 10 minutes? That was like an eternity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so as it got on, you know, then it's like, hey, man, I need 20 to 25 in-house shows.
Yeah.
18 typically on a pay-per-view. So when did you start really getting comfortable with time?
When I was getting comfortable with, like, doing stuff that is not planned beforehand. That's the main difference for me in general with the match quality, I would think.
Yeah.
As soon as you start getting comfortable to realize what is going on and then react to it accordingly while you're in the ring, I think that's the big key to like, like make the story you want to tell, like boost that and also like make some more time because, yeah, that's the thing. If you're stuck with something, it's not adaptable. So,
right.
Yeah, you gotta be able to figure out what is going on.
You're 31.
Yeah.
You've been in the business, give or take, 12 years. You've exploded recently. Hell of a worker. What does the future hold for you? What are your goals? What do you want to do?
I would say, like, in wrestling in general, I think it's a good thing to go out on a high when people be like, man, it really sucks that he leaves now. That's, like, one of the big goals. Like, when I end it, I want to leave at some point where people don't see it coming. And also then at some point, because at the end of the day, like you say, it's a business, like, make a good amount of money that the rest of my life will be easy. Like, not like, I'm ready to dig into the real world again, like go to work again, something like that. Maybe start my own business, something like that. But I want it, like, what I make out of wrestling should support me that I can make this way more comfortable than the common man would need to do it.
Yeah, but at 31 years of age, dude, I mean, you want to leave on a high note. I left at 38.
Yeah.
And man, I had 4 to 5 years sitting on the table still, but... You know, shit happened like it did. So,
yeah.
You know, shit. And you know what? When you're kind of planning for retirement or thinking about retirement, the thing used to be when I was in Tennessee in the USWA, all the boys would kind of say, you know what? You make your money, you get in so you can get out.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. You love the business so much, you never want to get out.
Yeah.
And so, like, the R word, retire, always sounds good. And all of a sudden, I got forced into retirement. I was like, what do I do now? I don't want to do nothing. I want to wrestle. Since then, I found what I wanted to do. But, you know, getting out of the business is a lot harder than it sounds.
Yeah. I imagine that. Like, that's something you would say. And at the end, like, experiencing it would be way harder. But also, that's, like, what I mentioned before. It was, like, I think a reason why many people don't leave is like because they didn't take care of a life to go back to while they were in the business. So it's important to me to keep like a real life active. So I have something when I go home, I have something to look for, be like, oh, it's so good to be here. And when I've been gone, I want to miss it. I don't want to be like, I'm happy to be gone from home. I want to miss my home when I'm gone because it's the place, like that's the number one place where you want to be at the end of the day. It's like in your own place. So. Yeah, but I believe it 100%, like you say it, like in general, like in life is like when you think about your future, like even if I look back 10 years, when I was 20 years old and I thought about things when I was 30 years old, things are a lot different when you're actually there than how you plan it.
I was talking to Joey Ryan just last week. He was sitting in the same chair you're sitting in right now, and he was telling me about his schedule and how he, you know, books himself and does his all negotiations and stuff like that. We're not talking dollar signs. We're talking about appearances and work dates. How busy do you like to be?
At the moment, I just try to make – I don't take everything I can do, but I try to stay busy because right now it's like – it's my prime time. I need to make the most out of it. But on the other hand, I – always try to don't be oversaturated present at places. So even though some places where I'm the world champion, I try not to be there every show because I still want it to be somehow special when Walter is on the card and not just a regular dude that I can see every week again.
Right.
I think that's very important, especially on the indies when you just work for a certain circle of shows, of companies. That's one of the most important parts. I always aim for one free weekend a month. Or at least a weekend where it's just one show that I don't have to travel far to.
Right.
That's what I always aim to, just for like mind and body recovery. So because it's pretty rough, like this month, for example, is like last weekend I had 4 shows and it was like the travel in between is stupid because on the first day I went to England and then from the next day from England I went to Germany to do a town show for WXW. But like with the travel being messed up, I left the hotel at 8:30 and I arrived in Germany 7:30 evening. Do the show, drive 2 hours to the next city where the hotel was, just sleep 3 hours, get on the next plane. And they would just like, it would be all red eyes. And like, then it would be just be home 2.5 days and come here again. Then I come home Thursday night. I come home Thursday night again and I leave Friday. And then I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But then I have a week off because then it's like, there needs to be a stop sometime because you go crazy.
Is the bulk of your work on the indie scene in the United States because the indie scene is so hot right now?
Yeah.
You ever think, hey, man, let's move to the United States for a couple of years?
No. No.
Oh, Walter!
No.
You're not leaving Germany.
No. Yeah. I don't plan on. Yeah. Like, no, I thought about this, and especially it would be like, everybody moving to Orlando now for WWE or something. Yeah. Like, it's my friends being there too, that's like something you talk about. No, it's not. America is not for me. Like, it is what it is.
Dude, it's good that you know that.
Yeah, it's not for me. I like, maybe I'm a little bit conservative about that, but I like the German, Austrian way of living, organized structure. Like, yeah, I like that. Like America is a little bit too
dude, home
chaotic
sweet home.
For me. Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with liking home.
So I don't mind to be here like for a week or something or whenever something occurs, but it's like, yeah, my base will always be Germany.
Hey, before we wrap up, I was sitting there, you know, thinking about you, watching matches, reading about you, and so and just sitting here talking with you. So when someone sees Walter on the card versus whoever.
Yeah.
Who is Walter, that guy that goes in the ring? Not the guy I'm talking to right now. Cool dude, very humble.
Yeah.
Happens to be a good guy in the ring. But who is Walter, the guy that people are paying to see?
The guy in the ring?
Yes,
Walter?
Sir.
I would say Walter, the guy that's in the ring, who's somebody who's in charge of the match all the time, and his opponent will have a hard time to overcome that. And
hence the ring general.
Yeah. That's the idea of that.
I had a similar gimmick. Not gimmick.
Yeah.
I had a similar name, the ringmaster.
Yeah.
You talk about bullshit. Damn, that gimmick sucked ass. So, but someone who's always in charge, you take what you do seriously, and
yes,
you're out there to compete and you're there to win.
Yeah, like I say, I want people when they see my name and they know next up is Walter, I want them to think like, okay, shit's gonna go down now.
Perfect.
It's like we had a laugh here and we were excited here. Okay, but now it's like, oh shit. Like, let's see how this ends up. That's what I want people to feel when I make it to the ring.
Dude, that's kind of along the same lines of what I was trying to do with Stone Cold Steve Austin, man. When I went out there, hey, we know what the business is.
Oh yeah, it's gonna get crazy.
Shit's on.
Yeah.
Last break, shit's on.
Yeah.
Hey man, definitely. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Great to meet you. I love your stuff in the ring, and I wish you all the best luck in the world and safe travels and safe landings when you're hitting that damn mat.
Thank you very much. No, it was my pleasure to be here, too.
And you're on social media. Where can people find you on social media? I know you...
Of course, Twitter. It's Walter, then caps letters A-U-T.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Any Instagram? Anything like
Instagram's
that?
The same.
Same thing?
Exactly the same.
And obviously people know how to get a hold of you because you're busy as hell.
They do.
Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you, sir.
If you or a loved one suffer from leg or foot cramps, you know how painful and disruptive they can be. Muscle cramps can jolt you out of a sound sleep or interrupt your daily life. Well, check it out, because I'm about to get you hip to TheraWorks Relief, a non-greasy foam that's proven to relieve muscle cramps fast and reduce muscle soreness. With daily use, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start, so you can get a full night's sleep or do the activities you love. TheraWorks Relief only takes minutes to apply, absorbs quickly, and it works. People love the results. You've probably seen Dr. Drew Pinsky on TV putting TheraWorks Relief over. It's that efficient and respected. The holiday season is around the corner, so if you know someone who suffers with muscle cramps or muscle soreness, get them TheraWorks. TheraWorks Relief is the top choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today in the pain relief aisle at Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, or by talking to your pharmacist. Learn more at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorksRelief.com. Check it out. Hey man, my producer Sean, he's been figuring out this stock market thing. He's been saying it's intimidating at first, but he's got a secret weapon. Our sponsor, Robinhood. Thanks to Robinhood, Sean's confidently navigating the stock market and feeling like a big shot on the trading floor. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. It's a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence by keeping it simple with its clear and intuitive design that presents data in an easy-to-digest way. The Robinhood app features easy-to-understand charts and market data, the ability to place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone, and a web platform that lets you view stock collections, curated categories, and analyst ratings for every stock. And the best part is that Sean is learning how to invest as he builds his portfolio, discovering new stocks and tracking his favorites through his personalized news feed and custom notifications. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show, Robinhood has given listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at steveaustin.robinhood.com to get your free stock and join Sean as one of the many folks building their portfolios and learning how to invest with the Robinhood app. One more time, that's steveaustin.robinhood.com. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off into sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Walter, for stopping by the crib today at 317 Gimmick Street. It was good talking with you. Walter, on the independent scene all over the United States, back in his home country, in Germany and in Austria, obviously a very busy guy with WXW. Continued success to you. Appreciate you coming by. Safe travels. Check him out on YouTube. Check out some of his matches, and if he's around you, pretty exciting guy to go watch. Hey, man, I'm sitting here thirsty as hell. I'm about to crack open the best damn IPA on planet Earth. My beer, Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. If you live in Cali, you can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines. If you don't live in Cali, you're probably shit out of luck. And if you need a badass pocket knife, I've got two for your ass. Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife. Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. Amazon's got the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin or go directly to the Cold Steel Knives website. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially betonline.ag, TrueCar, TheraWorks, Robinhood, and Geico. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. And if you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Steve Austin BSR. And until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
One more thing before we ride off. Go to Geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at Geico.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.